Good morning, everyone. If you look at the body of Jesus' teaching, of all the things that he said and done in his brief time on earth, the things that he really focused his audiences around, 80 to 90% of the material he covered was talking about this, not these technical, overly spiritual concepts that were nebulous, that were out there trying to explain life beyond this life. It wasn't about that. 80-90% of his content, his material, was focused on very practical, very pragmatic ways of living in our world. Ways that when we engage in them, we actually make life better here. And so this series called Being a Better Citizen, How to Be a Good Citizen, almost, is really focused around his teaching on the Sermon on the Mount. And it's focused on stuff that he thought would lead to a better world. And so, just so you know, we started last week. We continue on this week. And I want to tell you about a lunch I had. It's a long time ago, but it was memorable for me just because the guy that I was meeting with was in a really tough place, so down on his current chapter at the time that I met with him. And we got together and, you know, he was just worn out. We began talking. A lot of it centered around his job. He was hating his job at that moment. The downturn had happened and layoffs had happened. He was one of the survivors in his company. And, at one point I remember him just saying, like, upper management are so out of touch with where we are. He said, our workloads feel like they've doubled. Morale is at an all-time low. There's no thank yous. There's no recognition. It's just the screws have just tightened and tightened. So I tried to focus away from it. We talked about a lot of other stuff, and then it ended up circling back around, and he's telling me about this one story. This manager that he just can't stand. It's just bothering him, and I could tell. I mean, it was just right there on the tip of his tongue. Anything that it went right back to work. At one point I said, oh geez, you said you gotta run by one. We gotta go. And he's like, you know what? Screw it. I was like, you don't have to go? He's like, you know what? Let him fire me. I'm like, I don't think I want to be the cause of that kind of thing. How about we get going? But he was just so frustrated. Ever get that ugly, sickening feeling when life just feels so unfair? You do all that work and someone steals your credit, perhaps. You give and give to a relationship and the other person never seems to acknowledge it or ever seems to reciprocate. Drivers seem to cut you off. People make you late. Weather goes bad on you when you need a nice day. It's like, man, life is conspiring against me. Family argument breaks out and everyone takes her side or his side. And that voice starts talking in our ear. They should see all that you've done. That person should know better than to say that to you. Why does this always happen to you? It's unfair. Why can no one ever believe you? Why can you never catch a break? What is the right response when you feel powerless? When you feel like stuff keeps happening to you that's so unfair? When you feel attacked or picked on? These are common emotions, aren't they? You don't have to live much life not to feel them subtly sneak in at times. I want to talk about those this morning. And to explore this, I want to share some sage words that Jesus offered to a crowd that he was teaching. They're interesting words. I'll warn you. This is what he said. He said, "You have heard the commandment that says you must not commit adultery. But I say anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So if your eye, even your good eye, causes you to lust, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell." Oh, isn't that an interesting passage? I want to talk about this passage this morning. If you're new this morning, haven't been to church in years. Oh no. I'm guessing that as you're reading this, some of you are wondering, okay, so what does that have to do with those situations you just mentioned? Like, how is this even relevant? How does lusting after a woman and poking out one's eye have anything to do with the unfairness we feel with people and with life? Good questions. Those are great questions if you're asking that. Well, until last week, I think I would have been asking those same questions. Last week, I had an experience with this passage. And it kind of was like one of those. It's a mind bomb. It blew up as I'm reading and studying and reading commentaries. I began to see something that I think Jesus was getting at here, that I think is buried in, it's buried to today's readers in our culture today. I think when he said it back in his day, the hearers in his day who were sitting out there listening to him heard something completely different than what you and I hear when we read that. And I want to explain that today. And I think when I do, and when you see what I'm saying, I think you're going to read this and you're going to see just how relevant this is to yours and to my life. In order to get there, though, I need to give you a little backstory, if that's all right. This probably won't surprise many of you today, but for thousands of years, the ancient Near Eastern world was very unfriendly to women. Women were seen and appreciated in a much different light than we're growing into today. It's jarring. If you go back and you start to understand the culture and how male dominated it was, it's jarring to see. There was a crystal clear double standard. Polygamy was accepted form of marriage, obviously for the men, especially to kings and to wealthier citizens. A man could have sex with a prostitute. No social stigma attached there at all. You know, you gotta do what you gotta do. Unlike most male-female relationships today, marriages back then were extremely business-oriented. For the most part, women were married to have children, which would lead to economic benefit. If you married a woman and she couldn't bear children, technically you could just dissolve the marriage. It's kind of like a false promise you engaged in. And when they talk about adultery, really the primary concern back then was not so much about threatening the relational bond between a husband and wife, but about the man knowing what who his real children were and who was going to get his inheritance when he died. Now, I want to share some stuff. This is jarring, and for anyone, I would think in a modern culture like ours, contemporary, this should be offensive. This should bother us. But I'm going to read some of this stuff just because it's important for us to hear and to understand what the hearers back in that day were hearing. If there was adultery back in that time, it was often the woman who was really in trouble. It's really obvious in that story of the woman who was brought before Jesus. Remember? The religious teachers of religious law, the Pharisees, they brought this woman who was caught in adultery. They brought her in front of the crowds before Jesus. And they said, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. The law of Moses says to stone her. What do you say?" Now, just a question. Where was the guy? Huh? It takes two. The guy's nowhere to be found, but there's the girl. And stoning? Holy dynamos. Though Jewish men were warned about the dangers of lusting after a married woman, if truth be told, most of the responsibility for that lust mainly fell on the woman. Jewish writers often warned men just how dangerous these women could be, because they could invite lust. And if you committed adultery, well, that led to serious business for you too, but especially for her. The writer of the Psalms of Solomon, don't confuse that with the Songs of Solomon. This is a different Jewish literature. The writer wrote this: "Rule me, O God, keep me back from wicked sin and from every wicked woman that causes the simple to stumble. And let not the beauty of a lawless woman beguile me." I'm reading through some of this literature. I'm going, whoa. These were popular books of Jewish literature back in that time. How about this one? This was a popular book known as the Sirach. This is Jewish literature again, in modern circulation at the time of Jesus. "A wicked wife causes a humiliated heart, a gloomy face and a wounded heart. Drooping hands and weakened knees come from a woman who doesn't make her husband happy." I was careful when I read this around Kathy the other day. "Sin began with a woman, and because of her, all of us die. Don't allow an outlet for water, and don't give a wicked wife freedom to speak. And if she doesn't do as you say, divorce her." Pretty sad. Ridiculous. But this was the culture of that day. You can hear the strong bias against women, can't you? Part of that culture. And I'm sorry if this is triggering for some. We've had our share, haven't we, recently in this regard? It's largely why Jewish women back in that day, particularly married, Jewish married women, had to wear head coverings. Their hair was considered erotic. Did you know that? It's a major turn-on for men. They had to keep them all covered up. Because if you ever did one of those, there is no telling what you're going to do. I almost broke my neck doing that. But there's no telling what you would start. It was like you could light fires all over the place. Men, causing men. And if you did that, then really, was it a man's fault? Really, they just can't help themselves. So with that backstory in mind, let's go back to what Jesus said. "You have heard the commandment that says you must not commit adultery. But I say, anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart." I can see as Jesus was saying those words, he's going, yeah. I could see many of the men in that crowd kind of nodding their head going, yeah, no, it's true. You start staring at them too long. They get you heated up. Yeah. But then Jesus says something I don't think they saw coming. He says, "So if your eye, even your good eye, causes you to lust, gouge it out, throw it away. It's better for you to lose part of your own body than the whole body to be thrown into hell." You hear me there? So if your eye, even your good eye, causes you to lust, gouge it out. I can see the crowd kind of going, wait a second. Why are you saying if my eye causes me to stumble? Where are you going with this? Jesus, are you for a second suggesting that this is my fault? Because if that's what you're saying, Jesus, you are wrong. It was her. She did it to me. She was asking for it. How many times have we heard those words? Jesus, in one statement, shocks the dominant male culture by saying, no, actually, you are responsible. He places the responsibility for lust squarely on the shoulders of the person doing the lusting. He says, all you guys who have protested, she asked for it. He says, you have no defense in God's court. You're playing the victim, but you're not the victim. You're the perpetrator. Step outside of the story for a second. Modern psychology would back up everything that Jesus was saying exactly right there. It would call this behavior that had become so rampant, so cultural in that day, victim playing. Playing the victim. Playing the victim cards. Have you ever heard that? Playing the victim card. Victim players will often divert attention away from the responsibility by claiming, you know what, my behavior is justified based on their bad behavior. It's a way of escaping harsh judgment or condemnation. It says, how can you look at me? Did you see what she did? Now, I have taken the time to unpack all of this morning, and I'm sure I've raised the ire of some. I have made some sit on the edge of your seat going, this feels uncomfortable. Let me be clear. I've not shared all of this just to look all of us men in the eye and say, you need to stop playing the victim here, and you need to quit lusting after women. Although I'm sure that's a problem for some, and I'm sure that needs to happen. But I think this victim card business is a universal problem. Hear me out here. I don't think there's a person in this room that hasn't been affected by victim cards, either by you playing them or someone playing them on you. And this isn't just a male thing. This is a female thing too. So I'm an equal opportunity employer. I believe in stepping on everyone's toes and making you all mad. I'm dealing with my people pleasing this morning. Nature, I am just going to piss you all off. All right. How about we do that? I think about Susan. We'll just pick a random female name, shall we? Who's mailing it in at work. She isn't really excited about her job either. Truth be told, she's been slacking. She's been on social media. She's been arriving late, taking long lunch breaks, leaving early. One day her manager walks in and calls her out. But rather than admitting to her manager that she's been responsible for some of the things that she's been called out for, she begins crying, invoking a little sympathy. She's quick to point out problems with the other employees. She's points out issues that she has with the company and some of the policies. She even blames some of the clients who have let her down recently. And in the end, she sends a strong message. Everything that I've been doing, not really my fault. In fact, I'm kind of expecting you to feel bad for me. Think about the couple who are frustrated in their marriage. Frustrations have been piling up, kind of doing a slow simmer for a while on the inside. Both feel a little bit violated. maybe a lot. And over time, they just stopped trying as hard. Finally, things come to a head, and one typically goes on the attack while the other one shuts down. One starts raising their voices while the other one starts crying. And in the process, both pull out their long list of wrongs that they've been collecting, targeting the other person and how they've disappointed, and how they've hurt, how they've misread, how they've dropped the ball. And in their own passive-aggressive or very aggressive ways, they air it out back and forth, blaming, justifying. Both saying, I would never have done that if you hadn't done. Neither ends up really accepting a whole lot of responsibility. What about the person financially? Knowing that his credit card bill was high, changes he's needing to make, he needs to cut back, he knows it, but you know what? It's been a tough month. It's been a tough week. I think I deserve to do something. This gets said on both sides of the fence, girls and guys. I think I deserve to go shopping. You know what? I think I deserve a night on the town with the boys. I'll pick up the savings later. I'll make some changes later. I can't help it. I just really need this vacation, this purchase. Just a couple observations about victim behavior. Victims make judgments based on the assumptions that the world should be fair. That's one of the most common things victim players do. They have this underwriting assumption that everything really should be fair. So when things aren't fair, out come and we make these judgments about what's just gone on. That traffic down deep should be normal. I leave at this time every day. All of a sudden, it's not normal. There's been an accident. Well, yes, I'm late, but did you see traffic out there? Not my fault. No way. They have this expectation. We have this expectation that everyone should act a little bit more grown up than they do. That other people should just understand us better. We have a strong internal sense of what universal fairness looks like. We will not call it biased, but underneath we look at every situation and our fairness meter goes foul, wrong. This is not fair. That's not fair either. That's not fair. And then what ensues after that are the shoulds. We should all over everything, right? Shouldn't have to do more work than that guy. I shouldn't be doing this. What's wrong with these kids? I shouldn't have to tell my parents to call my kids. I shouldn't have to tell my daughter to call me on my birthday. After all I've done, they will not be willing to do this. You see, people play the victim card all over the place. I think I've used every one of these things, probably in the last couple days. I see this teaching of Jesus speaking today to every one of us who struggle with taking responsibility for actions and behaviors that we're engaging in, whether that's occasionally or whether that's chronically. Jesus isn't just looking at one, I think. This lens of looking at that passage, I think he's looking at all who want to sit there in the driver's seat and say, no, I think for this situation, I think that should... Yeah, I think I'll play that card. Not my problem. Oh yeah, they're really upset about that. But wait a second, I don't think what you don't know is they did this, they did this, and they did this. Three victim cards right there. I think that'll do. Great, go and deal with them. Jesus says this is a problem, and you need to stop running from your responsibility. How's that for straight words? I'm going to just find my place, can I? Someone says, you're done. You're done. It's interesting, these little behaviors that we engage in, where we use victim cards, they're often not disastrous. It's not like there's a big fire raging. Often, it's like they're little behaviors that haven't created any major issues yet, but they're kind of lined up in that direction. And we go, you know what? I deserve to hold this grudge. No, I'm not calling them. No, I'm okay with Christmas looking different this year if they want to be that way. Major? Maybe not. You know what? Things at home are a little bit tough, and it feels nice to be able to get the attention of this woman or this guy at work. Is there anything wrong with a little harmless flirting? I don't think so. I think I deserve it the way that my partner is treating me lately. And it feels kind of nice. Disastrous? Mm-mm. Not yet. We'll just keep playing those victim cards. And we'll say, yeah, I deserve this. Are you claiming bankruptcy yet? No. So, couple hundred here, a little trip there. Is it big? No, we'll make up for it later, but I deserve it. Mm-hmm. And I can't help it. I need this. Mm-hmm. Jesus is sitting here. It's like he's saying, you have a moment right now, right here, before things get really real. As he's talking about the guys who are lusting after a woman, you got a moment right here, right now. Nothing has gone crazy yet. Have you committed adultery yet? No. You're flying below the radar. But you and I both see the trajectory where that thing could be going. And you have a moment right now to turn yourself around and exit that room. You have a moment right now to take that credit card and put it back in your pocket. You have a moment right now to get on the phone and call your daughter. You have a moment right now to check your attitude at the door when you walk in and say, I'm sorry I was late, everyone. Poor planning on my part. You have moment after moment after moment when normally those cards are just ready. Take those cards and put them away and say, no, not today. A moment when your spouse, your kid, your aunt is looking at you hurt by something you did, and rather than reaching for the cards, saying, help me understand. I don't think I wanted to do that to you. You know, it's interesting, the gouge your eye out hyperbole of Jesus. I mean, it's a little foolish, isn't it? We all know that lusting doesn't, you don't need eyes to lust, right? You could poke up both eyes. All you need is an imagination, right? Scholars say that all day long. They're going, it's kind of hilarious. I don't think Jesus was pointing to the literal factuality of that thing. I think what he was doing is using hyperbole to put like five exclamation marks on his statement. says, do whatever it takes to own up to your responsibility in this story before it's too late. You have a moment right now to turn this around. Do it. Gouge out your freaking eye. Do whatever it takes, but don't pull out that card. So, I'm done. Can you spot areas in your life where your cards are pretty close? Can you spot a relationship where it's almost like you walk into the room with your cards out? Maybe it's not with someone else. Maybe it's with your own self. I can't help it. Maybe this was some area of your health. You've made excuses. You've rendered yourself powerless when you have power. That's what victim mentality does. It says, I have no choice. I had to do it. I couldn't help myself. No, you can. Gouge out your freaking eye, but don't play the card. All right. What could you do this week? What kind of conversations would sound differently if the cards stayed in the pocket, the packet? You want to be a better citizen? Jesus says, leave the cards in your pocket. I want to pray for you this morning because this is tough business. And I'm guessing that there would be people in this room who you have watched victim playing, role modeled for you. And you live in that way. It's just a part of your nature. And as I'm talking about this, you're maybe hearing this and you're going, wait a second, not everyone does this? I have a victim side of me that comes out really easily. I hate this series. It's just like kicking the crap out of me. But this wreaks havoc in relationship. In society, at our workplace, we got to stop. What could you do differently? Let's do it. So here, I'm going to pray for myself. And if any of it makes sense to you, maybe you could offer that up for you. Do I think God's going to fix this problem? That's why I'm praying. No, I think prayer for me is just kind of me acknowledging my role and asking God to help me. Remind myself of my role in this, God. I don't want to pull those cards. And I can see it. I can see it when I'm doing it at home. I can see it sometimes when I'm doing it with people in our community. God, I pray that you would just help me see it before I do it. No judgment, no shame. Just help me to see it. Help me to keep that card in my pocket. And own my responsibility. Help me to take responsibility. Help me to change my world. God, I want to be a better citizen. Amen. All right. Not so painful. You still pissed off? I hope not. Let's have a great week, hey? Be a better citizen. We'll see you next week. Vince is up.